Welcome back, everyone, to another episode of True Crime on Easy Street. Another episode Scott managed to not speak during the intro.
Well, I meant to, and I got distracted by my microphone, and I forgot. I'll try to do better next time.
How'd you get distracted by your microphone?
I was just twiddling with it.
Oh,
the next twiddling. Thing I knew, the episode had started.
Twiddling with it. Okay, look, you guys talk and kill some time because we have a couple shout outs and I got to get my phone.
Perfect. Oh, okay. So should we introduce ourselves before she gets completely distracted?
Maybe so.
Scott Wright, mediocre journalist.
Katie Givens, not a lawyer.
Kelly Turner, not a doctor.
All right, Kelly, you figure out what the hell it is you're going to do.
I got it.
And I will discuss something. Katie, how was the show last night at Easy Street? Now, this is coming to you a couple of weeks after the show that Katie and I are going to talk about tonight because we're booking episodes. Because summertime is coming up. We're doing vacations and people are traveling. So instead of panicking at the last minute like we used to do, we have gotten ahead of ourselves now and we're booking episodes, as Katie calls it, to have them stacked up and ready.
We're now contractually bound to do that.
But we've been doing it anyway.
The Believe Network.
I thought you were going to look up some stuff on your phone.
I have it.
Oh, never
I'm
mind.
Ready.
All right, Katie, anyway, quickly.
Take forever like you. I can work my smartphones.
Fancy box.
Yeah.
Katie, how was the show?
Oh, great.
Country always. Case was last night, right?
Yes.
That was May the 3rd. I don't know when you'll be listening to this. In the middle of May sometime.
In a couple weeks, yeah.
But yeah, that was... It was a pretty good show.
We've had a weekend full of like rain and storms, so it's like...
Yeah, it was kind of crappy.
This will actually air after we have our... We're the number one podcast in... True Crime podcast in Alabama, Fish Fry and Sunset Cruise.
That'll be
party.
The second annual party for that because
well,
we were...
Well, this year it's
last
a fish
year.
Fry. Last year it was a cookout.
Got it. So. Okay. But yeah, for the second year in a row, we have been named by some... Is it what's the name of the organization that gave
know,
us that
link.
Title?
If you search true crime, top five true crime podcasts in Alabama, you'll find the link, and we're number one.
We're number one.
If you search top five podcasts in Alabama, we are number three.
Yeah.
Hey.
FeedSpot. Yeah.
FeedSpot.
Okay. So thank you, FeedSpot.
Yeah, thanks very much for that.
So that prompted a whole nother party. If you go to our Facebook page, you can see the picture of everybody from our first annual.
Can you believe it's already been a year since we did that?
I know.
Seems like we got together for that photo a few weeks ago.
Yeah. Right. So you're hearing this after we've already had the party. I'm going to go ahead and say the food was delicious and we had a great time.
Unless the boat sinks.
It's not going to
sink. And even if it does, the water's like waist deep out there, so we just wade back to shore.
The boat is owned by Stacy, who used to be a Marine police on the water here.
So it's probably up to snuff specs-wise.
Yeah, tip-top shape. Yes, no, I'm sure whatever Shorty makes would be delicious.
Oh,
it wouldn't
even
matter. But the menu he has sent out sounds...
Oh, my gosh.
I'm
and
very
the pictures.
Excited.
It's like food porn.
Yeah, he's already made a couple of pies, stuck them in the freezer that he's going to thaw out for us. One quick shout out before Kelly gets started.
Yeah.
To all of you Star Wars fans out there, we were recording on May the 4th. Be
May
with
the,
you day.
Oh, yeah. May the 4th be with you.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. So that's the day we're recording. You'll hear this later, but I just wanted to throw that in.
So my kids were talking about this, and they're talking about going to the movies and seeing all the Star Wars movies.
They've
and
got some of the old ones back in
circulation. I said, they're going to show them all, but that first one, right? And they both look at me and like, that's the most awesome one. And I'm like, not that one, episode one. That's not the first one. Blah, blah, blah. And I pulled
You had to show them how it worked.
They're going on how they were released.
Wrong answer.
So they kept, griping at me because I finally looked at them. I was like, go outside, nerds. I pulled a Uncle Baby Billy. So,
either you get that reference or
nerd kids are at the movies watching all the, or I don't know, sometime today. Yeah. I don't know what they do.
I don't
keep up with them.
I always heard that he decided to make the fourth one in his 6-part story because there were so many, he would have had to have so many extras, in those wars and those battles that were fought in the first three.
Oh, yeah.
That he decided, hey, we can do this one with the technology that exists. And maybe one day we can go back and do the others. And sure enough, that's what happened.
And episode one is terrible.
I agree.
Ugh.
Yeah.
Not a good one. Katie's not seen it.
Of course not.
All right. So shout outs.
Yeah.
All right. Scott, you remember you asked people to email us.
Oh, yeah. How did that go?
We have a couple of shout outs from that, but I'll just take two at a time today. So shout out to Jordan Watson. Thank you for being a listener. And also shout out to Tony Jane. Thank you so much. One is from Alabama.
Thank you.
One is from Australia.
Oops. I think I know who's further away.
So,
and that was what we asked.
God, you
tell
beautiful,
us how far away.
You beautiful Australians.
Yeah.
So I have no doubt that Tony Jane is beautiful, a beautiful person, because everybody there is, they don't make ugly people in Australia.
That's right.
They don't.
But sorry, the first loser is our friend from Alabama. So please
Jordan
keep listening.
Watson, but thank you for listening from McKenzie, Alabama. So thank you.
I know where McKenzie is. I'll have to
look that up. It's farther away. I mean, that's a good ways away from
here.
He
thought he had a shot.
He did have a shot. until Australia showed up and ruined everybody's party because they're so beautiful and perfect. So.
I wonder if the Ghost Train Fire episode got us that listener from Australia.
I don't know, but we have more than one from Australia. So the rest of you Aussies,
yes,
you might be further away than
that's right,
than Tony Jane. So
yeah, fire away.
And it might be Jane Tony. I don't know.
True
I don't know if
crime.
It's Tone Janie or Jane Tony Jane or Jane Tony.
We've had a couple of episodes in Australia, haven't we?
I think there. Yeah, we also did the Easy Street Murders.
It's Tony
that was
Jane.
In Australia.
It's Tony Jane.
Okay. That makes more sense than Jane Tony, or does it? I don't know.
I don't know. Either way, it's perfect.
Well, they're on the opposite side of the world anyway, so if we set it upside down, that's why. Think of it that way.
So anyway, so shout out. Thank you so much for listening, and the contest continues.
Yeah, we'll keep going.
Until Scott calls off this nonsense, and then we'll send you a prize. So
this is the first that I've heard it called nonsense.
It is not nonsense. It's fun. It's wonderful fun. We love it.
We did just order some new t-shirts, so maybe we'll save
That's
one
what we're
of those.
Do. We're going to send them a t-shirt.
Fire them off a t-shirt.
You're going to get a t-shirt. Absolutely. So,
and there'll be one of only 12 in existence.
12 in existence.
We did. This is like a
big
collector's
budget
item.
Over here.
Well, we think of it as a collector's item t-shirt. Katie.
It is.
Limited
it is.
Run.
And also, very limited run.
Mm-hmm.
And also it saved us a few bucks.
Yeah,
okay.
It did.
I'm done.
Are you?
Yep.
Okay, so I'm going to take let's go to the water cooler, the Aeon filtration water cooler.
Okay. What are we talking about
let's
today?
Let's take a sip of our water.
Oh, sure.
Okay.
There.
Delicious, cool, refreshing water.
Yeah.
So the word on the around the water cooler is today's topic is very confusing.
I love it already.
I'm going to just throw it out there like I did to you guys in a text yesterday. Imagine having 20 stab wounds, 10 of those to the back, the neck, and the back of the head, like all in the back.
Okay.
And it being ruled a suicide.
Is Fahmy Malik involved in this somehow?
Oh, no, but... The medical examiner's name is not as out there as Fahmy Malik, but we'll get to that name.
Okay.
But what do you think as we prop up on this delicious water cooler and talk about this? What is your thought initially when I say that?
You might could stab yourself in the back of the neck once.
I mean, you can reach it. If you want to stab yourself in the back of the neck,
but you're going
to
do
head,
it probably once.
You're going to be able to do that. And then 10 more times up front, the final one being the one that is left lodged in the heart.
Nope.
The final stab wound. Because we know which stab wound was last.
Okay. I'm suspicious. Was,
you're a little suspicious.
A little suspicious
do you,
of suicide.
I'm a lot of suspicious.
Okay. A lot of suspicious, right? What other thoughts are you having when I tell you that?
Who are we covering for?
Yeah. I'm trying to think. Was it?
It's just like what?
I think I want to know if it was what the situation was where the crime scene.
Yeah. Well, I'm going to muddy up the waters for you. It's that sounds very cut and dry.
Mm-hmm.
I'm probably going to muck it up a little bit. I know I'm going to muck it up a little bit for you. Mm. And
you can use the F-bomb on the show.
Oh, I will in a minute.
Right.
It's going to be one of those rare days that I will because I'm quoting something.
Got it.
So that's coming soon.
All right.
But I want to say, before we leave the water cooler, thank you, Aeon.
Yeah, big time.
All right.
Big time thanks to Aeon.
Yeah, so now I'm back in my seat.
All right.
How quickly I moved. Oh, wait.
One thing about Aeon.
Oh, yes. Back over to the water cooler. Hurry.
We had a guy come to the office the other day they started doing water coolers, someone else. I don't know what company. And Shane was like, no, actually, we just have this wonderful cooler from Aeon. And they went back and looked at it. And he was like, oh, yeah, this is a nice one. I can't beat this one.
I can't beat it. That's right, because you can't.
Sweet.
It's delicious. Have you tried the hot water on it yet?
Yes,
Do you
have
delicious hot chocolate or tea or whatever?
I had oatmeal.
Oh, perfect.
Mm-hmm.
You don't even have to wait on the microwave.
Nope.
You know it's good product when the competitor goes, oh, I can't top that.
Yep, exactly. So check that out and listen to our ad today, because if you mention true crime, you get a 5% discount. Mm-hmm. So, all right, back to my chair here. Oh, my chair is so comfy.
I'm very curious about this. I know nothing about it except what you said in the text message.
So I looked up different resources and I listened to a few podcasts on this one. Mm-hmm. And I think the best way to approach this is to go timeline wise.
Okay.
And there is a wonderful website that, I mean, you could pull this up and follow along with me on the timeline if you wanted to. And it's crimetimelines.com.
Ooh.
And you're talking about more information than you can sift through.
Okay.
Court documents, timelines, crime scene photos.
How have I been doing this for, how have Katie and I both been doing this for 4.5 years and we both went, ooh.
It is an amazing resource.
We are the 101 version of true crime.
One
more reminder.
Now, if you want to get your master's degree in a crime, then go to crimetimelines.com and you will days and days and days and weeks of information to sift through. So I'm going to use their timeline.
Okay.
And then I've got some other information that I've peppered in from other resources. But if you want the 102 version and not just the 101 version, or 201, however your college does that, you can check out a few podcasts. The Prosecutors has a good, I think it's a 5-part episode on this. And then True Crime Garage has a 3-part.
I've heard of that.
Episode on this. And so you can check it out. And we're talking about Ellen Ray Greenberg.
Okay.
Is our victim today. And I'm saying victim because, you know.
Sure.
Whatever.
Well, Katie has these nice plush leather chairs in her office. I'm sitting on the edge of mine.
Okay, exactly.
To see what's going on here.
All right. So we're going to just start from the beginning and go from there. In June of 1993, we have Ellen is born.
Say 93?
83.
83, okay.
Ellen is born in New York City. Her family, she's the only child of her parents, Joshua and Sandra. They eventually leave New York and move to Harrisburg, and she ends up graduating school and attending Penn State University. She is
a Harrisburg, Pennsylvania.
Yeah.
Okay.
She's a lionizer.
A what?
A lionizer. So at Auburn, those are the War Eagle girls or plainsmen. These are the, I don't know where they are.
Alabama, I get it. The Nittany Lions.
But they are, they're the people who introduce athletes and their parents to the campus and walk them around the football field. Yeah. And so, like I said, at Auburn, that's War Eagle girls and plainsmen. Do you know what that is in Alabama?
I should. I'll think of it in a minute.
Anything at JSU, Katie? Not sure.
Just athletes?
Where they just, they're kind of like the hosts and the hostesses.
I mean, like we have like ambassadors and go leaders.
There's.
But like, I don't know if there's a, that's just basically, for athletes.
You're one of the first few faces that someone sees for Penn State if they want to come to Penn State and play football or whatever. So she, that's what she was. So that tells you a little bit about Ellen's personality. She's a beautiful girl, beautiful smile, very warm and just inviting human being. So you're not going to be a lionizer at Penn State if you're not, you know, any college. So in 2007, Ellen met her soon-to-be fiance, Sam Goldberg. They met through a mutual friend, and they actually went on a blind date. That's how they met for the first time. That is how I met KT. It was a blind date.
Oh, yeah?
Yeah. And here we are, 20-something years later. Okay. Summer of 2010, after 3 years of dating, he proposes, and they're just super excited. They've planned the wedding for August of 2011. Mm-hmm. They move into an apartment together. On the sixth floor there in Philadelphia. It's a pretty modern apartment. So just standard.
Mm-hmm.
Two people living in an apartment. Now, she is a teacher at an elementary school. I don't really know if it's just an elementary school, but she's a first grade teacher. Mm-hmm. She wanted to go to school for speech path, then kind of realized that wasn't for her, and then went after she graduated from Penn State. So then she went to night school at Temple and became a teacher. So she's teaching first grade. December 2010, her parents and her friends are going to start noticing a significant change in her behavior. She was always cheerful and composed and you know, Ellen. That's how everybody knew her.
Sure.
And all of a sudden, she's anxious all the time, and she's stressed. So they're going to ask her about these things, and she's going to talk about work is very stressful. She doesn't really love her job, according to her friends and family, and she's stressed out planning the wedding. It can get stressful.
Sounds like stuff has stacked up on her. It happens to us all.
Absolutely. I remember being in graduate school and planning a wedding and also working a full-time job, and I remember my hair falling out.
Yeah.
During that time. Like pieces
a stressful
of hair.
Time.
Yeah. So stress is a weird, crazy thing. So I get it. But she's texting her mom from time to time. She has a really good relationship with her parents. And she just says, I want to leave this place. Get me out. So she's unhappy. Hmm. When they ask her about, are you unhappy in your relationship? Are you unhappy in your job? Because she then goes on to ask her parents if she can move back home with them. Hmm. And they're thinking, well, you know, you're engaged. What's going on here? She says it has nothing to do with Sam. She's stressed about her job. She's just struggling with some severe anxiety happening.
Well, sounds like that is maybe the easiest thing to fix is change jobs because she's still going to get married, she says.
Mm-hmm.
And change jobs. Maybe that'll help with the stress level.
But she doesn't. And so they encourage her to go talk with somebody because as December's rolling on, she's not getting any better. So she goes and she talks to a psychiatrist. She sees a psychiatrist on three different occasions. She gets prescribed Klonopin and Ambien. So the Klonopin is a benzodiazepine that is for anxiety attacks and stress, things like that. And then the Ambien is because she's not sleeping. It's keeping
I thought when you
sleeping.
Said Ambien, I thought that is for...
She's getting
aid.
These two things. Yes.
The Klonopin, is that a daily thing or is that a take as needed thing?
It could be both.
Okay.
Mm-hmm. So, and in 2011, I don't know if it's changed any. I know nowadays it can be both, okay. But, you know, the psychiatrist that I work with in my other life as a full-time professional prescribes Klonopin instead of Xanax.
Okay.
Doesn't like the dependency issues that can develop with Xanax. Of course, any benzo is going to run that risk of dependency. So that'll come into play. There's a reason I'm saying this about Xanax. Mm-hmm. All right. So Klonopin is longer acting and helps manage that anxiety and panic attacks. And then the Ambien is going to help you sleep. Okay. So January 8th of 2011. Ellen texts her mother saying, quote, I'm starting the med. I know you don't understand, but I can't keep living with feeling this way, end quote. So I don't know if she held her prescriptions and then started taking them then or, you know, a lot of people go, ooh, when you need a prescription for something for mental health and especially in 2011, we're a little bit better in 2025, but people get nervous because a lot of times it is a chemistry experiment and the doc's going to say, if you start to feel worse, let me know.
And we'll try something else.
I
know somebody who had that experience and it took a while.
Takes a while to
find the right thing.
Mm-hmm. Once you do, it's a miracle drug.
Yeah, right.
But to get there, it can be quite uncomfortable and can be, life impeding.
It might get worse before it gets better.
Yes. And it takes those medications a little bit to begin working correctly. Now with Klonopin, probably not so much. I've never taken Klonopin. I have taken a half a Xanax before and the bad things turned to good things. I'm just going to tell you, I'm not going to lie.
Was it for an airline flight?
It was not for an airline flight. It was just like for
okay, but not stress, to be nosy, but I just know someone who...
Yeah, and then everything's okay.
That made it airline travel a lot better.
And it was immediate.
For this person.
It was pretty immediate.
It lasted long enough to get there.
And I'm talking about a half for me. And all my bad thoughts turned into good thoughts. And Kelly was fine.
Zippity-doo-dah through the airport.
Exactly. But it was only one and as needed time. And it was done.
Okay.
So, anywho, back to... She starts her medication January the 10th. Let me stick a pin in that. Hold on just a minute. Don't forget January 10th.
January 2011.
January 22nd, 2011. She sends out her save the date cards for her wedding. And of course, they're set to get married August 2011. She goes shopping with a close friend. They're looking.
Wait, August of what?
August 2011.
Oh, okay. I thought you said that. Never mind.
So, I'm sorry. Did I misspeak?
No, I just heard you wrong.
Okay.
You're fine.
So that day in January, after she sends out her save the dates, she goes shopping with a friend for bridesmaid dresses, has a total and complete meltdown, crying. Mm. Like, can't do any more shopping. Apologizes dearly to her friend. I'm so sorry. I know I'm not myself, but I'll get it together. So we started the we've been on the medication probably, according to the text message from mom, maybe a couple of weeks now.
Sounds like when I was planning a wedding, I just would break down.
Break down. I don't really see anything too abnormal with that. Mm-hmm. I guess the outcome, you know, Katie's outcome is quite different than Ellen's.
Yeah.
So, you know, I guess everything now has a different meaning.
When I think about
2020.
Yeah.
When I think about having to go to a wedding, I often break down.
Is that how you used to just react? I can't do this anymore.
It's an hour? Okay. Are you kidding?
Okay. Now we're at January the 26th, 2011. We're going to break this day down. That morning at 7, she spoke to her mother. At noon, she received a text from a friend. They're talking about school's getting out early that day. She's glad. Thank goodness. There's a blizzard happening.
Weather day.
And they're letting school out early. At 1:15, she leaves her job. She goes and fills her tank up with gas. She goes to the apartment. She makes a phone call to a local restaurant. She calls somebody else. The timeline, people don't know who, lasted about 30 seconds. She enters her grades for the first grade students remotely from her apartment. She sends her final text at 3:47 p.m. At 4:45 p.m., Sam, the fiance, leaves the apartment and goes to the gym, the on-site gym in the apartment. That can be validated with the apartment building cameras.
Okay.
You see him, he's in his workout gear, he walks in the gym. About 5:30, you see him exit the gym. He's sweaty, he's had a workout,
sure.
Obviously. Yeah. Checks out. He goes up to their apartment building on the 6th floor. He can't get in the apartment because there is a hotel room style latch that's been engaged from the inside. So he's trying to use his key. He can't get in. He's banging on the door. He's yelling for Ellen. Then he starts texting her and calling her. Between 5:32 and 5:54, he's going to email and text Ellen multiple times. He's hot and sweaty. It's also a blizzard outside, so I don't know if there's an indoor hallway.
It is an indoor hallway.
It's an indoor hallway, but sometimes they're still cold. Sure. I don't know. But anyways.
But this is the type of lock that you can only engage from the inside, so he knows she's got to be in there.
Yeah. So he starts sending texts. Now, I want you to pay attention to all of these texts because Sam has no idea, but these phrases in these texts, we're going to use a lot ourselves once this starts unfolding. He first says, "Hello, open the door. What are you doing? I'm getting pissed. Hello, you better have an excuse. What the fuck? A-H-H-H-H-H. And then the last one says, "You have no idea." Okay, the neighbors can hear Sam calling for Ellen and knocking on the door, so they vouch that during that time, all that is happening.
What floor is the apartment on?
6th.
Got it.
This is how Shane acts when I don't answer the phone, too, and I never answer the phone.
Right, and a lot of people have read a lot into those texts. Mm-hmm. Those sound like... That doesn't sound atypical to me at all, those texts.
I wouldn't say... I think it sounds fairly normal.
Pissed.
Yeah.
What are you doing?
I mean, was she a practical joker? Did he think she was playing a prank on him?
No, we have no idea.
Sure.
And he's not been gone. I mean, he just did, it looks like a 30-minute workout on the elliptical, I think is what he said.
Okay.
And he's back. And so what has happened between now and then, you know? So just remember all those phrases in those texts because we'll be pulling those out again. We'll be using those. Not to talk about Sam, just... This is what we will be thinking.
Okay.
Okay. At some unknown time, Sam Goldberg is going to call Kamin Schwartzman. And I don't know if I'm doing that first name right. K-A-M-I-A-N. Kamin Schwartzman. That is his cousin. His cousin, whose father is James Schwartzman, who's a lawyer. Cousin and uncle. Mm-hmm. So he calls him and to let him know he's locked out of his apartment. Ellen is not responding to the phone calls, the text to let him in. And so Kamin says, go downstairs to the security doorman for help. So he goes downstairs to the lobby and he talks to Phil Hanton, the doorman, and says, can you come? They have a conversation. He's telling what's going on. He says, can you come break down the door? Phil says, no, that's against policy, but I can call her for you. So Ellen's phone shows these missed calls from the Venice Lofts.
Well, he's already tried that. We know the phone call doesn't work.
Right. Well, but the doorman can only do what he can do. He can't just go busting into doors in the apartment complex. And yeah. He says, this is what the policy says. So then the doorman says, well, you're going to have to call the police because I can't, you mm-hmm. know, do this. So if you had bolt cutters, you could just
reach in,
do that latch. Yeah. You know, everybody knows what latch, because you can mm-hmm. open the door a little bit.
Yeah. It's like it's a tongue and groove thing. There's mm-hmm. there's a metal ball on the end with a mm-hmm. narrowing.
Yes.
A gap in between, and it mm-hmm. it will only go so far, and you can't open the door.
Correct. So that didn't really go anywhere in the lobby. So he calls the cousin back again to tell him the security guard couldn't help. You see him on the surveillance camera go into the elevator from the lobby. You see Sam. He is alone when he gets on the elevator. Sam Goldberg answers a call from his cousin and uncle during that time. They're kind of calling and calling back. The timeline gets a little fuzzy on the specifics.
Trying to help each other out.
Look at the cell phone data. Yeah. And they're telling him to call 911. He goes back up to the apartment. He's in front of the door. Then they're going to instruct him to force your way in. Just bust the door down. Give it a drop kick. Mm-hmm. So he does that. He goes into the apartment.
So he's able to break the door down.
He and it's not a lot. You just see where the latch from the door. It doesn't take a lot. I mean, he just busts it.
Ripped
it
off that portion of the door.
Yeah, and he just goes in. It doesn't really, when you look at the pictures, because believe me, this website has the pictures.
Okay.
There's nothing that's disconnected. You can just see where it's kind of busted. But it's still attached, mm-hmm. the latch. So
it was a shitty latch.
You can just see where he's, you know, where it's connected there. All right. So he goes in. He finds Ellen slumped on the floor in the kitchen, leaning against the cabinets. The cousin and the uncle hear Sam scream, and they say, call 911. At 6:33 p.m., he calls 911. You can listen to the 911 call. I don't, you know, people love to pick apart a 911 call.
Very
true.
It's
so weird. There's a couple of weird things on the 911 call that I personally found weird is he's saying that she's slumped down on the floor. There's blood everywhere. She's unresponsive. They're instructing him to give CPR. Mm-hmm. He goes there. There's like, rip her shirt off. You got to give her CPR. We've got somebody on the way. He goes to rip her shirt off. At first, he says, I can. It's a zipper. And then he goes, oh, my God, there's a knife in her chest. And he says, she fell on a knife. And then he says, oh, she stabbed herself with a knife. Like, there was a couple of things where he just
he's trying to explain it in his own mind.
He kind of just goes
seeing.
To that. And I don't know that that's what I would go to, but I don't know. That was just odd to me. I don't understand how he didn't see the knife sticking out of her chest. They've interviewed the first responders, and that's the first thing they saw.
How long is her hair? If she slumped in the right way, her hair might have covered it.
It might have. She does have longer hair, but I want to say it. I don't know if it was in a scrunchie or there was a scrunchie. We'll figure out about the scrunchie in a minute, but it's sticking in her chest. Now, the first responder said that's the first thing he saw. was the knife sticking out of her chest.
But her body had been moved.
Sam has been there, possibly trying to give her CPR, and and you can hear him he's distraught on the 911 call. There's blood everywhere, and the lady's telling him, you're going to have to calm down. You're going to have to administer CPR until they get there. You've got to help. You know, they're trying to walk him through that. Okay. So they get to the scene, the emergency responders. They find Ellen in a semi-upright position between two corner cabinets. She's seated on the kitchen floor. There is a serrated knife 4 inches into her chest. Mm. There's a strainer filled with blueberries on the counter. There's an orange that's been freshly sliced. There are two clean knives in the sink, 20 stab wounds, 10 alone to the back of Ellen's neck, blood on her body. And at 6:40 p.m., she's pronounced dead. James and Kyman Schwartzman, the uncle, lawyer, and the cousin, arrive at the apartment, according to this website, about 7:30 p.m. They've received multiple calls from Sam at this point. Officer Jamie Budd arrives at 7:31 and requests the medical examiner. Another detective comes on the scene at 8:27 p.m., just documenting the different. Now people are getting here.
Mm-hmm. We've got a dead body. Response to a found dead body.
Right. Here's what we find. Okay, I said her body was on the hardwood kitchen floor. Sitting upright in the corner between cabinets, like where cabinets join, with her head kind of slumped over to the side. Not the side the knife was sticking in. Her arms are just kind of down by her side. She has a zipper, dark colored shirt, a t-shirt on, gray sweatpants, light brown Uggs, pair of eyeglasses are on the floor to her right. There's a white towel grasped in her left hand. A hair tie or scrunchie is on her wrist. So her hair was down. No personal effects on the body. Mm. January 27th at 3 a.m., Ellen's body is removed from the apartments and taken to the morgue for an autopsy. Before Ellen's autopsy was completed and the results of the professional examination known, the fiance's lawyer, Uncle James Schwartzman, and son called the apartment manager, the property manager, and they wanted access to the apartment. At 9 a.m., we're still on January 27th, Dr. Marlon Osborne, this is our medical examiner, performed an autopsy. In his examination, he noted, quote, multiple stab wounds to the chest, abdomen, and back of neck, end quote. Then he creates a draft autopsy report, calling it a homicide.
Sure, that checks out.
Yeah, it's the logical conclusion based on what I know so far.
Right. The property manager contacted the police department because the Schwartzman, James Schwartzman, has asked for access to the apartment to get a suit for his nephew. The police department told the property manager that it wasn't an active crime scene and went so far as to give her the number of a crime scene cleanup crew. So the lawyer,
the medical examiner has said this is a homicide,
mm-hmm.
and the very next morning the police say,
"No, we're all still in that same day."
Well,
while he's doing this, he's creating this draft. The lawyer's talking to the property manager. The property manager's calling the police. They're saying it's not a crime scene. It's fine for him to go in.
Well, that's crazy.
And here's the number for a cleanup crew.
But you said that he said it was a homicide.
In the meantime, this is occurring.
Haven't even got the report yet, sounds like.
Yeah, they're saying all this.
Oh,
yeah.
Shit. Are you sure this isn't in Arkansas?
So, nope. Sorry. Okay. This is Marlon Osborne, mm-hmm. not Fahmy Malik.
Maybe they're related by marriage.
So, the uncle is going to be allowed access to the apartment.
If I'm the lawyer, I'm thinking, why are you letting me into this building?
Well, once the apartment was, here's another thing that makes me go, ah, like one of his texts. I can't figure out, according to some timelines, that cleanup happened before the lawyer went in the apartment, which was like that very day or the next day.
Wow. Strange and then, indeed.
Or I'm not sure, and I'll tell you why you're going to get confused. You'll figure this out. You're going to get confused. Just trust me.
I'm there.
You're already there.
Yes. I feel like I'm the mayor of Confusionville.
This says once the apartment was cleaned, James Schwartzman showed up and removed not only a suit, but Ellen's purse, cell phone, and laptop.
Starting to sound a little fishy.
Yeah. Then, at the same time, the police have applied for a search warrant.
Of the apartment.
Yeah. Yeah. Yes. Think about all those texts.
Do you have to have a search warrant if you've got a murder scene?
What the F? You have no idea.
Probably.
I'm getting pissed. Right? Okay. So then we, on the 28th of January, these are the official autopsy findings. We now know that he has classified the death as a homicide. And we've talked about the multiple stab wounds. There are critical injuries, he notes, that affect vital areas, including aortic arch, left lung, and cervical spine. Indicates severe trauma to essential organs and structures. The knife is about five inches. There's about almost four of it in her chest. The weapon was used it caused some substantial wounds that were deep. A lot of the wounds are substantial.
Mm-hmm.
There's bruising, he notes. The presence of multiple bruises at different stage of resolution, which suggests a pattern of physical altercations or abuse occurring over time.
Ah.
These are not my words. These are
understood.
Marlon Osborne's words in that January 27th, 2011 autopsy.
So far, it sounds like he's the only competent person involved in this.
But so what he is saying is it looks like she has bruises and then some will heal. Then she's getting more bruises and those are in. And then she's getting more like overtime.
He's seeing
different. Think she's been abused.
Yes. Different levels of bruising that suggest
abuse.
Right. Abuse. Because and there are pictures you can see on the arm. There's fresh bruises. There's the light yellowy green looking bruises, you know.
And I have a theory about the door.
It shows the diagram on this website, and it shows all the different places where there's bruising all over her body at various stages of healing.
Right.
And it's in more places than you just look down and go, dang, how'd I get that bruise? Because I'll get a bruise on my leg or something. Go, what? Where'd that come from? I don't know. It's on legs, arms, hips. I can show you guys this, all these pictures. Our audience can look them up on crimetimelines.com and see all of these photos. Okay. According to our timeline here, the next thing that happens is the search warrant is executed. Now, these are the things that they are able to get, or they're searched or seized from the apartment. Assorted knives, blood samples, a serrated knife with a black handle, assorted paint samples, a bloody hand towel found in the kitchen, other potential evidence items related to the crime scene, assorted clothing, blood samples, a diamond ring, latent prints, a Rubbermaid container. That's where I go, hello. I'm just going to quote all of his texts. Hello. Had it been clean then? How did you get all of that? I'm so lost. And now I'm getting pissed. Okay. So I told you, I'm just going to keep, here's the drinking game. Every time I quote one of Sam's texts, just take a sip. All right. So, the search warrant is executed and the police are going to release a statement January the 29th. despite the homicide ruling, authorities were, quote, leaning, end quote, towards suicide in Ellen's case and looking into, quote, mental issues, end quote, she might have had. Lieutenant Raymond Evers emphasized that the case is still wide open, but he said he wanted to assure residents of the area that there was not, quote, a maniac on the loose, end quote.
How do you know?
Cell phones,
yeah, how do you know?
And laptops are retrieved by police from James Schwartzman. Okay. So they go and get those, the cell phone, the laptop, and all of that from the lawyer uncle. March of 2011, the police department, the PPD is going to demand a face-to-face meeting about Ellen's case with the medical examiner and his boss. Also at this meeting, a representative from the Philadelphia District Attorney's Office. And they have met with some investigators. And then they all want to meet with the medical examiner and his boss. After this meeting, Dr. Osborne is going to change the classification of death to suicide.
After this meeting with all these people, the medical examiner is going to change
to suicide.
With no additional...
Well, you've had the Philadelphia Police Department meet with the district attorney's office. Then they are all going to meet with the medical examiner, and he's going to leave that meeting and then change the ruling.
I don't like it.
I don't either.
One of the police investigators says, quote, we couldn't prove anything else, end quote. And then he goes on to say, quote, we were just letting things go where it went, and that's where it went, end quote.
I'm calling bullshit so far.
Mm-hmm. Would you like to quote one of Sam's texts right now?
What the fuck?
There you go. Yeah. Okay. All right. Laptop forensics. We'll go over that after a word from our sponsors.
Hey, Scott, how have you been feeling lately?
Fine so far.
Are you good? Do you have allergies or any kind of issues that someone from Cherokee Family Healthcare could help you with?
Not now, but they have in the past. Tell everybody what they can do for you.
All right. So Connie Geimer and crew, they are there Monday through Friday. You can check out their website at CherokeeFamilyHealth.com for all of their office hours and detailed information. But what they are committed to doing is providing the highest quality of healthcare to patients with compassion and respect. And I can attest to that, Scott. How about you? Did you have a good experience?
I had a wonderful experience. My only time I've ever been to Cherokee Family Healthcare.
And it was great?
100%.
Awesome. Well, I've been participating in the weight loss clinic there, seeing great results, and I feel great. So that's just one of the services that they offer. They can do primary care, all other kinds of things, from DOT physicals to I'm just got the sniffles. Let me just walk in and see what I can do about that. But you can check out their walk-in hours on their website. So give Connie Geimer and the gang a call at 256-266-1021. That's Cherokee Family Help. Hey, Katie, do you know what's really terrifying? The unseen dangers lurking in your water.
Exactly. We spend all this time talking about crimes, but what about the crimes happening right in your own pipes? Hard water, chlorine, and contaminants could be wreaking havoc on your home and your health.
That's why we trust Aon Water Technology, an authorized Connecticut dealer, to keep our water clean, safe, and, most importantly, free of unwanted intruders.
Whether it's for your home, business, or family, Aon's filtration and softening systems give you crystal clear water, no mystery involved.
So don't wait for a real horror story to unfold in your plumbing. Call Aon Water Technology today and get the clean, crime-free water you deserve.
Visit aonwatertech.com or 256-262-3426 and schedule a free water test. Be sure to mention True Crime and receive a 5% discount on any system or service. Hey, True Crime fans, it's time to start planning your 2025 summer staycation. Why not take it right here in Cherokee County, Alabama?
We have a ton of things to do here in Cherokee County. You can wet a hook in Weiss Lake, swing away at Cherokee Pines Golf Club, take in the breathtaking views at Cherokee Rock Village, hike the National Preserve at Little River Canyon, enjoy an all-day splash at Pirates Bay Water Park, and there's so much more.
The Cherokee County Chamber of Commerce and Tourism has a full list of lodgings, RV sites, kayak rentals, and campgrounds, and they're all anxious to meet your vacation needs, whatever they may be.
So come stay with us this summer from wherever you are. Plan your Northeast Alabama summer staycation by visiting cherokee-chamber.org.
Kelly and Katie, let me tell you guys a story, just a quick one about something that happened to me recently while I was dining at Easy Street Restaurant, Bar, and Performance Hall. A man there told me that he and his wife were moving into the area sometime soon, and they were looking for somewhere to live. And I said, the first guy you should call is Greg Oliver. Greg is the owner and broker at Go Realty here in Center. If you're like the man that I met who is thinking of moving to this area and you're looking for a home or property anywhere in Northeast Alabama or Northwest Georgia, give Greg Oliver a call at 256-504-3847. Greg has a full list of waterfront, residential, commercial, farm, and investment properties, and he is ready to help you find whatever you are looking for.
Thank you to all of our wonderful sponsors. Kelly, Scott and I are on the edge of our seats. We don't know what to do.
Yeah.
I'm totally confused.
Very confused. Laptop Forensics, we learn about those April 1st, 2011, and they're going to look at the search history. And this is why I skipped some things in the timeline earlier, because I wanted to come back and let me just muddy up the waters for you even more. So Ellen's computer between December 18th and January the 10th, they're going to recover it. They're going to find some searches that suicide methods, quick suicide, and painless suicide.
Oh, okay.
Who has this? Does anybody else have access to that computer?
Well, who did?
That's what I'm asking. The two people who lived in the apartment. That's what I mean.
Sure, absolutely. And then the police, you know, they had to retrieve the computer from someone else. But, you know, they can't manipulate dates in a search history.
True.
So the Schwartzmans didn't search those things and try to there's no way, because it tells the date of the search.
Right. Okay.
And so a lot of people say, oh, they did that. No, they didn't, because the search was in December. And
a month and a half.
It was between December 18th and January the 10th that she's searching these things.
Right.
But here's the thing. They're also going to look at her text messages, and then that one to her mother about get me out of here, they're going to say meant here in general. Mm-hmm. I don't really think that's what Ellen meant, because she's asking to move home.
Right. She's saying, get me out of
the city. Don't mean her heavenly home. She means her where she grew up.
She means her parents' home where she grew up.
Yes. And the toxicology report is going to show traces of Klonopin and Ambien and Xanax. That's why I brought up Xanax earlier. Now, normally you're going to get one or the other prescription. You're not going to get both, but, you know, in 2011, that is different. And I'm not a doctor. So you may be on the Klonopin regularly, and then they say, well, here's the Xanax for as needed or whatever.
Or what if she's halfway through her Klonopin prescription and she goes to the doctor and says, hey, this isn't working.
This isn't working. And
switch
they say,
to the Xanax,
all right,
and she's still got some in the bottle.
Could be. Yeah. Sure. There's so many ways to explain that. But here's the thing. I go back to my personal experience with a half a Xanax.
Okay.
Kelly wasn't going to stab herself 20 times.
Kelly was happy.
Kelly was. And also, I don't know that, I mean, I feel like my arm might have been like a Muppet arm or something. Like, I don't know that I'm going to have that. I didn't care to.
Yeah.
All my bad thoughts were good thoughts. I'm not saying that's what happened with Ellen, but.
But if you have both of those, couldn't they possibly put you down? I mean, like,
well, I don't know. I'll tell you this. I sure as crap, I'm not washing blueberries or slicing an orange either. Uh-huh. I don't know how, it depends on how long it's been in the system and what she's taken. And she was a tiny girl. So I'm thinking the prescriptions weren't really big prescriptions. I mean, her body fat was null.
Mm.
So I don't even, you got to take all of that into consideration. I don't know how long it had been since she had taken any of that.
But I mean, the medical examiner figured that out, right?
That was in her system. Those three things.
But I mean, in what level?
I'm sure, recent, but I don't have that.
The last dosage would have been administered.
That out of it. Sure. Yeah, you might could dig that out of that. There's so many people who are going to look at this autopsy now, and they're going to get so many different things. It just gets more and more confusing. Mm-hmm. So I don't know. That's just, and I know that medications do come with a black box warning. It's typically more your antidepressants. But yeah. I'm sure.
Not the drugs designed to make you feel more exuberant.
Well, and you know, right, maybe it. If it's not the right medication for you, it could have that effect. You know, we've already talked about sometimes they have to give you several to get it right.
Yeah.
Or it's not started working appropriately yet, and you come back from the feelings, and now my feelings are all back, and I'm feeling bad again. My good feelings are bad now, and I don't want to be here anymore.
Are we going to get to the, and I don't want to get ahead of you, so just tell me to shut up. Are we going to get to the point in today's episode where you lay out a theory of what you think happened?
I mean, yeah, we can do that.
I mean, yeah. I don't want to do what's not part of
your plan. Because we've got several people who lay out what they think.
Okay.
I mean,
I'm curious to hear.
Stick a pin in that, done. Scott. Okay. April 15th, the medical examiner's office investigation report was revised to reflect that when the fiance, quote, forced entry into the apartment, an apartment security man was reportedly present during the entry.
Was he?
Now, Dr. Osborne says he received that information at this big meeting, which was one of the reasons he used to say why he was changing it to suicide, because there was someone there with him when he busted
and saw for a fact that the door was indeed bolted.
The door. spoiler alert. The doorman says, no, I wasn't.
Mm-hmm.
And the footage shows him getting on the elevator alone. From the lobby alone, going back up. That's the reason I said that.
Got it.
Okay, but just hang with me as this unfolds. January 2012, the Greenberg family, they're going to order this. They want an autopsy report. They want photos. They want photos of the autopsy, the photos from the body at the scene, and the medical examiner's investigation report from the scene.
So they've given it a year.
Mm-hmm. And
for somebody else to do
something. Now
they're
getting their own people involved.
Understood.
And they are involved with another doctor who looks at this report in 2012 in January and says, quote, strongly suspicious of homicide, end quote.
Yeah.
Then there's another doc that gets involved in June 7th of 2012 who says the scene findings were indicative of a homicide. Okay, moving back to April the 4th We press forward to April 4th of 2017. So we're
jumping.
So
now we're 6 years
we're
in.
We're jumping, yeah. Well, the wheels of justice grind slowly.
This is true.
You have a detective provides a report saying that he believed that the body was moved. Mm. He says, it's my opinion. And this is Detective Scott Eelman. It is my opinion that Miss Greenberg was not in the position in which she was found at the time that the blood was deposited on her sweatpants, sweatshirt, and shoes. It's also my opinion that Miss Greenberg's head had been in several positions during the time of blood flow, and it remained so for enough time as to have the blood flow across her face and back toward her ear, upward toward her eyes, and also downward toward her chin. It is my opinion that the bloodstain evidence in this case is inconsistent with the positioning which Miss Greenberg was found. Furthermore, I have serious concerns regarding the patterned blood stain to the loft of Miss Greenberg's right leg, the minimal amount of blood stains on the floor in comparison with those found on the clothing of Miss Greenberg and the flow of the blood stains on her face. So he thinks it was staged.
I just go back to the fact that on the 911 call, they told the boyfriend to give her CPR. You can't give somebody CPR if they're propped up on a wall, not effectively anyway. I mean, I would have assumed that she would definitely have been moved and laid flat on the floor.
But when they found her, she's still sitting up and the knife is still in her chest.
He didn't try to give her CPR?
Well, he tried to, in the call, he's trying to mess with the zipper and then that's when he notices the knife.
Yeah. But I'm just assuming CPR is...
He didn't give her CPR.
I guess
not. No, he did not.
Yeah.
June 7th, 2012, another doctor issued a report. Oh, no, I've already told you that about the findings. We've got a couple of doctors who've said this looks like a homicide. We've got in 2018, we have another PhD who says consistent with homicide. 2019, we have a doc completed an examination of Ellen's remains and determined one of the stab wounds was administered post-mortem. That was in a report. Dr. Emery's examination revealed Ellen's stab wounds were inflicted after she died. It would strongly suggest that her death was not a suicide, but the fact that the medical examiner claims he was not informed of this crucial detail by Emery is going to raise questions about whether the investigation was properly conducted and could potentially lead to a reevaluation of the case. So we got somebody saying they looked at it and found some post-mortem stab wounds.
I don't think there's any disagreement that the investigation was conducted poorly because they had the whole damn thing cleaned up by the next afternoon.
Mm-hmm. I mean... One of the stab wounds, they're saying, messed with her spinal cord.
That's what I was thinking the whole time.
Turn around and continue stabbing yourself.
No. And you definitely can't stab yourself post-mortem.
No.
Nope.
And we all know what the last stab was because the knife is still
there. The knife was located.
But if you've reached around and severed if you've damaged your spinal cord, you can't turn around and then... Wham! Lodge a knife 4 inches into your chest.
I mean, I guess it would depend on what part of your spinal cord you hit. But yeah,
a knife? That's a lot. That takes a lot. I guess you can 4 inches into your chest,
but I don't think you do after you've stabbed yourself before. Like I was saying,
No.
I think you can stab yourself not repeatedly.
And let's say, let's say Ellen was experiencing suicidal thoughts, and let's say those searches were by Ellen. Painless suicide.
That ain't it.
20 knife wounds?
That's not it.
Yeah, that's extreme.
That's a bottle of sleeping pills.
And if you just look statistically at suicides, men and women don't typically pick something that violent.
Right.
Yeah.
They don't usually use a gun.
Ellen... had wanted to kill herself, she had the pills in her nightstand. Mm-hmm. They were all right there.
Yeah, exactly.
It's just weird.
Yeah.
Well,
it's a little more than weird.
And the door thing, while we were on commercial break, you want me to bring this up now?
Yes, please.
So while we were on commercial break, I just Googled hotel door latch.
Mm-hmm.
And there are all sorts of YouTube videos on how to defeat that latch from the outside. Mm-hmm. And I just wonder if there's a way to reverse engineer that.
Sure.
And figure out a way to latch it
mm-hmm.
from outside and with some thread or a shoestring or some rubber bands.
Yeah.
Because this method that I'm looking at uses rubber bands and electrical tape, and that's a way to defeat it from the outside.
Mm-hmm.
So if you could figure out a way to reverse engineer that, you wouldn't leave any evidence because you could just jerk the tape off and cut the rubber bands and bring them out with you, thus latching the door from the outside.
Mm-hmm.
But if there's no witness to the door being latched from the outside, that doesn't matter to begin with. You could just make that up.
Mm-hmm. And you could damage the latch. Mm-hmm. Like I said, that you can see where the screws are damaged, but it's not off completely in the photos.
You could do that with a hammer after you got inside. Mm-hmm. And I'm not trying to blame the fiance.
Right,
but
right.
I mean, anytime you end up with a situation like this, I would think that the first suspect on the list at the top would be the person, like Kelly, like Katie said, who saw her last.
Mm-hmm. Usually it is. And they did interview him and got his statement and released him.
Well, they let the Menendez brothers go after a short interview when they first, when all of that happened. No. We know how that turned out.
I know. So the I think the most important thing about, well, there's a lot of important things, but there's not enough evidence to convict at all.
But it was worthy of a look.
Well, because the investigation was garbage. Yeah,
there's no evidence because they didn't investigate anything.
We don't know if they're, right. Maybe the evidence was on the kitchen
floor.
What
are you doing? I'm getting pissed.
Yeah.
Ah! You have no idea. None of us have no idea.
Yeah.
I don't think that's not what I would say to someone that I was, we're never going to know, but that just doesn't sound like
frustrating.
The text sequence. Honey, are you okay? Knock if you can hear me. Did you fall in the bathroom? I mean, I'm thinking she fell in the shower and hit herself on the head. See, if I come back and the door's locked.
I get being mad, but at some point, don't you get worried?
Yeah, didn't hear the worry. Mm-hmm. In that text
and I
stream.
Think that the worry came in when he started talking to the doorman. I mean, if you truly believe in Sam Goldberg's innocence, mm-hmm. the worry came in when he was talking to the doorman, and he's
hey, help me get this door open.
I mean, it sounds like
he was honest. Hey, come up here and help me open this door. Mm-hmm. So that makes me believe that.
Yeah, right.
Unless he already, I mean, you could argue that he knew the policy and knew that the guy was going to say no, but then that covers his ass. Who knows?
No.
Because there was no investigation.
He wanted the guy with him to bust down the door. That's why he had his people on the phone with him.
Mm-hmm.
He had mm-hmm. people on the phone with him when he bust down the door.
And one of them was a lawyer.
Mm-hmm. And then you have, the 911 call. Like I said, he does sound
distressed.
Distraught.
Yeah.
And he's all over the place as if he just found his fiance murdered or stabbed or I don't know what, dead.
Yeah.
I don't know. Here we are. We go to, let's see, October 15th, 2019. And the parents are going to file a complaint. Their whole point is to try to get this manner of death changed to at least undetermined.
That's where mm-hmm. it starts. I mean, we've covered other cases where as long as it's suicide, nobody's going to help you. No investigative agency is going to lift a finger. But if you can get one MA to say, or ME medical examiner, to at least, like you said, undetermined,
mm-hmm.
well, then
at
you
least
can
something.
Reopen the case maybe.
And it's in 2019.
8 years later.
That the family, when they're filing this complaint, that's when they're going to release the written declaration from the security guard saying, I wasn't there.
Right.
Mm-hmm. So it took that long to get this released into court. Him saying, no, I didn't go back up. And so that's when the Goldbergs are going to find this out that he lied about that. And there's actually video footage of you getting onto the elevator
after speaking to to the doorman.
Yes.
Got on the elevator by himself and went back up.
So that is entered into this, and then they're going to present these still images from the surveillance footage. I've watched him walk. I've seen the whole video. The property manager is going to explain that an unnamed PPD representative had advised her to call a third-party service to have the apartment thoroughly cleaned. She's going to give that. You know, that's when all this is going to come out. I gave that to you in the timeline, but all this stuff doesn't come out until...
But it's almost 9 years later. October of 2019, you said.
Yeah, now we're...
January of 2020 is the 9-year anniversary, so almost 9 years later.
Oh, at 9 years later, the judge rules that the case could move forward, but we're right in the middle of the pandemic there. Mm. All right, that's starting. And so then it starts moving forward in 2021. In 2021... They hire the family, the Greenbergs hire, I can't say this guy's last name, their attorney, Joseph Pedraza, maybe. Maybe I didn't butcher that.
Too many names.
I apologize Joseph, if I messed that up, which I'm sure I did. But he's going to help them file a lawsuit against the medical examiner's office. Again, they're they want it changed to homicide.
Yeah.
So to support their case, they've got two neuropathologists who review the report. They examine brain tissue samples. You know, they're coming out swinging to get this. They're having to do this themselves. Both of these experts are saying that suicide is not a viable explanation. In January of 2021, the Goldbergs learn about this surveillance video. They learn about, so they're providing that to their counsel. You know, they sure. Discovery is happening. So they're doing all this. They're learning about this. And they are, okay, let me just read this. When a copy was provided to their counsel, but only after counsel, who had been repeatedly told the PPD did not possess videotape from the apartment complex, they refused to accept these representations and threatened to involve the court. Now, following the threat, the videotape was, quote, miraculously discovered and produced 11 months after plaintiff's counsel's initial request. So they had... The PPD had this tape the whole time. So it wasn't until they started getting threatened that they were like, oh, we had it.
Yeah. Of course they did.
Of course they did.
Here it is. Oh, here it is. I found it. Okay. May 2021, Goldbergs and their attorney learned for the first time that the findings and conclusions by the doc from the August 2019 examination of a stabbed wound being postmortem. April 20th, 2021, Dr. Osborne's boss is going to testify that he, quote, did not find reason to overturn Dr. Osborne's opinion, end quote. Ellen's death was a suicide. July 2nd, 2021, let's see, let me just try to sum up this all this up. All this is going to start going public. About the doorman is not there, that he forced his way into the apartment without anybody there. The police officers, Pennsylvania State police officers, interview Dr. Osborne's boss about his case, about whether it's a suicide or a homicide. He's going to say that he did not specifically recall this other doc's information about the postmortem wounds. So he just, I don't recall. There's also some sort of weird statement that's in one of the autopsy reports, and you can look this up, where this other doc looks over Dr. Osborne's stuff and says that the spinal cord was fine. There was nothing wrong with the spinal cord. When an investigation happened, when I believe it was some kind of crime show. All this is linked on this crimetimeline.com. Mm-hmm. They speak with this doc. The doc says, I don't recall that.
Mm.
Well, it has been 10 years.
The previous district attorney is now in private practice. And so he will be interviewed by anybody that will and scream it from the rooftops. He thinks it was a homicide.
Well, it's his job to prosecute the case.
He tried to talk to this lady doc that said the spinal cord wasn't severed, and he said, she said, I don't know what you're talking about. So he's like, she didn't rule that, but it's in it. You can read it in one of the reports, the medical examiner's report.
So what, now we're saying that maybe the medical examiner's report was forged?
Well, I don't know.
Or altered, at least.
Or altered.
Well, it said that the security guard, it was changed to say the security guard was with him when he busted down the door.
I'm just curious at this point about the relationship that Sam's uncle, who is the attorney, has with the Philadelphia Police Department.
I'm not sure.
Because it sounds to me like,
well,
it certainly sounds like something fishy happened there, I guess we'll never know.
I don't know if it's that or if the investigation was so crappy that they're just trying to...
There was no investigation.
That they're trying to cover their own butts.
Could be.
And we've ruled it a suicide. It's a suicide, case closed.
Make it go away.
It's really hard to to get a department to admit that they suck.
Yeah.
And that they really flub something up.
Well, we've pointed that out many times mm-hmm. in 4.5 years.
Sure. So I don't know if it has anything to do with
self-preservation.
Sam's family or yeah. not, you know? And it really sucks because had there been a thorough investigation, Sam may not have ended up being villainized. There might have been something there that showed somebody else was there. I don't know.
Yeah.
I have no idea. That's the thing. You don't know because it wasn't
frustrating.
Properly handled. Yeah, very frustrating. Ah. So, okay. All right. October of 2021, we got a judge who says that the civil suit filed by the parents can proceed to trial.
Against the medical examiner's office.
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
And Dr. Osborne, they've named the doc mm-hmm. and the office.
Okay.
We press on. We press on and we press on to 2022. What can I give you from there? They move the case from the Pennsylvania Attorney General's office. They excuse themselves because of conflict of interest.
Okay.
So then it moves to Chester County District Attorney's Office for an independent review. In March of 2023, the neuropathologist finds that and testifies about the spinal cord, it in fact, was punctured, which directly contradicts the suicide ruling. Again, there's so many different doctors looking at this. It's so confusing. It's like, which one do we take?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Who's right and who's not?
Well, I mean,
don't know.
That sounds like a lot of cases, that trial cases that we talk about. The prosecution will have an expert who says one thing. The defense will have an expert who says completely the opposite.
Right.
And it just boils down to who the jury believes.
Right. Then we ping pong back and forth some more. And we get to, I'm just going through a bunch of stuff here. And we get to 2025. January 31st, judge ruled that the medical examiners, Marlon Osborne and Sam Gulino, which is Osborne's boss, must testify at trial along with homicide detective John McNamee.
First guy on the scene.
I guess so. He's the one who kind of dug his heels in and said, we let it lead us where, that's where it went.
Got it.
February 2nd, 2025, the Greenbergs reached a settlement with the city for an undisclosed amount.
It's usually how that goes.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, that sounds very familiar.
Additionally, the medical examiner's office will reevaluate Ellen's manner of death. Mm-hmm. And that's where we are.
That's it.
Present day. They're going to look at it and reevaluate it. And he says, Dr. Osborne says he's going to reevaluate it and I'm sure he'll change it. His first ruling was homicide.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Shorty West is going to be pissed at you for leaving us hanging.
Now, I'm going to let the audience hear you guys see these photos for the first time.
Oh, okay. Boy.
I've got some photos here and these are like, they're AI-generated photos from this website that, like I said, you get your master's degree in a case. And they're showing you, the first photo shows you all the different stab wounds. And then there's also a big gash in the top of her head.
As if she fell?
Maybe. I don't know. Hell, it wasn't
investigated. I mean, I want to hear from some expert that could say it's possible that this woman could have had such an adverse reaction. Oh no. I mean, that's,
what's your thought?
That's, I think I would have run out of gas before I stabbed myself that
wow.
many times.
Did you see that? All the different, and you can look and see these photos at,
and it's
at
just
this
an
website.
Image of a torso from the side, mm-hmm. from profile that kind of, and there's a knife hanging in the air.
For all 20 stab wounds.
Every one of the 20 stab wounds. And there's more on the back than on the front.
Mm-hmm. And there's a huge gash in the top of her head.
A huge gash in the top of her head right back there where...
Where there's not a knife.
Yeah. Well, I mean, I can see that being a result of a fall at some point. I mean, she was found on the floor.
Mm-hmm. Mm. Partially sitting.
Partially sitting.
Slumped down.
Yeah.
Okay. The next photo that I'm going to show you is the AI generated one that shows you the wounds that were the significant wounds. Remember I said there's wounds, several of them are significant that, yes, that will do a person in, right? There they are.
So there's one in the back.
No, there's two.
Two in the back. Sorry, I don't have my glasses on.
Three in the front.
And three in the front.
Wow.
So what, she's getting up her nerve with the other 14, 15,
they're
and then
saying
finally
that
two in
each
the back
one of these should
have been enough.
Should have. Mm-hmm. Okay, and then this final photo that I'm showing them, ladies and gentlemen, is the gash on the top of her head. So you can see how big it is.
I mean, that looks like a knife.
I'm not saying that you couldn't still function with that on top of your head, yeah, but.
I mean, how many times do we talk about when there's a lot of wounds, mm-hmm, it's anger, mm-hmm, or craziness?
Sure. And I people have gone into a frenzy and harmed themselves multiple times before killing themselves before. Yes.
Sure.
That has happened. There's this frenzied, you know, and, you know, I got to tell you, you know, Sam Goldberg did respond when CNN was doing an investigation, and he said that people don't talk about mental health enough. And he said, I just hope you don't ever have to lose someone to something like this. It was horrible. You know, whatever his statement was, you can read it on this website, but he's still saying it was a horrible experience for me. I lost the love of my life. Then I was turned around and blamed for doing it. It was a nightmare. And, you know, we need more mental health awareness, basically, is what he's saying. Now, he has since then remarried. And he was even on a podcast with a friend of his that was a famous friend. I don't even remember the guy's name. Alan something. I don't know. Whatever. You can look it up. Sam Goldberg, if you want to.
Yeah.
But, I mean, he's not going to talk about any of this. But just, people who interviewed Sam's classmates don't really describe him as a violent person, a likable guy, popular guy. At one person says, yeah, he was a spoiled rich kid.
Well, if I could ask Sam Goldberg one question, the question would be, in the months leading up to this happening, mm-hmm, did you see her mental health deteriorate?
Right, and that's one thing that we really don't know. We know that her parents...
I mean, that's the implication, it seems like, from what he did say.
Right. Her parents and her friends noticed this change in her in December, mm-hmm, before she was murdered. I mean, I think she was murdered.
She was murdered.
I just don't see how you hurt yourself.
You
that
don't
many
stab
times.
Yourself 20 times.
I don't
she
see
could
how.
Have mental health issues and be murdered.
True.
All day, every day.
Yep.
She was trying to do something about it. She was, mm-hmm, seeing someone. She was taking her medication. Just getting sleep. If you're not sleeping,
I would love to know what her psycho or her psychologist had to say.
Right. Well, in some
Did
of the notes, you can read some of the notes. Again, this website has it all. Was right. You know, the last set of notes was that she was improving.
Okay.
And seemed to be better. But you know, you can walk in and lie to your therapist.
I guess so.
You don't have to.
But it defeats the purpose.
But if you're, you really shouldn't lie to your psychiatrist because they're going to change up your meds. Mm-hmm. So if you're experiencing good things from the medication, if you feel like they're working, you're more inclined to tell them that than you are to just shoot rainbows up your counselor's ass, you know?
Yeah.
So
it's self-defeating.
Yeah. So I really don't know. This is, ladies and gentlemen, this is all I have on this case. If you want, again, crimetimelines.com, Ellen Greenberg death, go to that, look it up. You can go to CNN.com and see an interview with a team who really looked into this. There's a huge article there, and it has so many different things. You could, they have a lot of pictures of her. I never did show you guys an actual picture, and I'll put a picture of Ellen when we have this, when this airs on our Instagram page. But I wanted to give you guys a photo of her. This is Ellen. She's a beautiful lady with a beautiful warm smile. That's Ellen and Sam.
Okay. Very beautiful.
Yeah. I mean, wow. Good looking couple, you know, but that didn't mean anything, you know. But she's always very happy and smiling. And then all of a sudden she wasn't anymore. And you know, that can happen. But anyway, CNN did a great, the story is Thomas Lake from CNN. And this was published in December of 2024. So this came out before some of these 2025 movements on the case. But you can definitely see there's her, a picture of her wrist and the bruise on her wrist. That's a fresh one.
Very confusing.
Yeah, it's the size of about a thumb, isn't it?
Yeah, just about a thumb. Like she'd been grabbed by the wrist.
Yeah. So interesting to say the least. At least maybe they can get her death changed to undetermined.
And reach some closure at some point.
Imagine having to fight this long with 20 stab wounds to just get it changed from suicide. That's amazing to me.
Yeah, I can't see that being a 24-hour diagnosis on something that is obviously so confusing and frustrating and maddening, and for them to just go, ah.
And I really just think that the motivation is to cover up incompetence.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I don't really think that this family's that connected to the Philadelphia Police Department. I don't know that. I don't know anything. There wasn't a damn investigation. So I don't know.
It's confusing. Well, in case it was a suicide, the Suicide Prevention Hotline, Lifeline out there, if anybody has any sort of thoughts like that.
Yep.
It's 1-800-273-TALK.
Exactly. So utilize it when you need
it. Make that phone call if you need it.
Yep. Well, thanks, guys. I'm so sorry that I left you with more questions than answers today.
Perplexing.
It is. There's a wealth of knowledge on this case out there. You can take a look at it, dive deep down into it, and just jump down that hole of madness.
All right. So if you still think we're a pretty good podcast after that confusion.
Yeah.
Say something nice about us on your podcast platform.
I think it was a homicide. You wanted me to tell you.
I think it was.
No, yeah. Absolutely.
That's where I'm. Yeah. I know Katie is fully on board with that.
Yeah. Yeah.
Check us out on Facebook. Check out our website, truecrimeoneasystreet.com. Send us a message from how far away you are listening. You may win a free t-shirt. That is truecrimeoneasystreet@gmail.com. Is that it, guys? Are we done?
We're done.
Good night, everybody.